Welcome to Leaning Toward Wisdom, the podcast. The website is leaningtowardwisdom.com. It's modern tales of an ancient pursuit. I'm doing some computer work. Insomnia is struck again. It's the middle of the night. I have ID Discovery on the YouTube TV happening. Homicide Hunter, featuring Lieutenant Joe Kenda, a retired homicide detective from Colorado Springs, the hotbed of mayhem and murder. Okay, any city that's got any kind of population at all is a hotbed for mayhem and murder. But he's looking into the camera, and he's been describing this incredibly dysfunctional family behavior that has involved murder. And he answers with his in his own witty way, "I don't know, because I'm not crazy." Greetings and welcome inside the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Cantrell. I'm your host here, coming to you from Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas. Today is Saturday, February the 27th, 2021. Reasoning with unreasonable people. Trying to relate to crazy when you aren't. Trying to influence foolishness with wisdom. Yeah, that's largely what we're all about here. Trying to combat hatred with love, battling sadness with humor. I mean, there are just so many of these paradoxes. I don't know, because I'm not crazy. Yeah, it implies that if Lieutenant Kenda, if he were crazy, then maybe, just maybe, he could better understand this crazy behavior that he continues to observe in these people who perpetrate murder. I catch myself sometimes saying things that are just habitual. You ever do this? I guess they could be verbal crutches, but not really. These are more phrases or sayings that you just kind of say them on autopilot. You may not be aware that you say them all that much, except maybe sometimes. Like now, here I am at 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm watching this and I hear Lieutenant Kenda say, "I don't know, because I'm not crazy." And I don't know. It pops into my head. I'm thinking about, you know, man, I say this an awful lot. No, not that. Not, "I don't know, because I'm not crazy." But I say, "What do I know? What do I know?" I most often will say that when I'm making an observation. Not from certainty, but from uncertainty. That is, I really may not have much of a clue if I really am understanding something or seeing something clearly or not. And then at the end, I will say, "But what do I know?" And I hear Lieutenant Kenda make this comment, "I don't know, because I'm not crazy." And I think, I do say, "But what do I know?" an awful lot. Knowledge, knowing, that's kind of a valuable thing. Lieutenant Kenda he's got extensive knowledge of murder and crime, criminal behavior. But he still doesn't understand it after decades of working in it because, well, it contains a certain level of crazy, and he is not crazy. And don't we all know that sensation? Don't we all know that feeling? Consider two people desperately in need of money. One scrambles to think, they're looking around the house, "What have I got that I can sell that I can turn into cash?" Maybe they're thinking about, what can I do, you know, to kind of hire myself out, you know, clean gutters, rake leaves, collect trash. I mean, whatever I can do. Nah, not the other guy. The other guy instead, he thinks, "Who's got what I want? Because I'm going to go take it. I mean, I've got this pistol right here. I just need to go rob somebody." I mean, just two completely different ways of thinking. And we see the first fella who's looking for something to sell and something to peddle, and we think, okay, yeah, we can hopefully understand that. That second fella, man, I'm sure hoping you don't understand him. I sure don't. You know, my mind just doesn't go there. Right and wrong are involved here. And those are heavily involved in these notions. Lieutenant Kenda, he can't relate to the criminal mind. I'm hoping that you can't either. I know I can't. Hopefully we can't relate to the immoral mind. And our hope here at Leaning Toward Wisdom is that we can't relate. Well, my hope is that we're growing, we're transforming so that we can less and less relate to the foolish mind. Everybody faces challenges. Some of us face really serious challenges. And it's just hard to imagine somebody who thinks that bad behavior is somehow going to make a bad situation better. So I'm out of money. Yeah, I need to go hold up a store, or I need to go rob somebody. Or I know, I just need to drink as much alcohol as I possibly can. Drugs, that'll do it. Yeah, I need to have as much immoral sex as I can possibly. That will make my situation better. No, it doesn't. It doesn't. But I don't know because I'm not crazy. Crime, immorality. I mean, you know what this is. This is human degradation is what it is. You don't hear that word much. It sounds way more highfalutin than it is. Degradation. The dictionary says it's the act of lowering something or someone to a less respected state. Well, sign me up for that. Yeah, I mean, it's funny. You see athletes, professional athletes especially, who will lament that, oh, man, they were disrespected. You know, the opponent disrespected me. It's like, it's just the worst thing in the world. And meanwhile, they can get arrested or charges can be brought because, well, they might have been accused of rape or spousal abuse, but, oh, but they were disrespected on the field of play. I mean, would a person intentionally lower themselves to a less respected state? Yes, the answer is yes. People do this all the time. I'm not saying that they think they're lowering themselves, but it seems to me that some people are just too self-centered to just don't care enough maybe about themselves to increase their respected state. I mean, how else can you explain somebody that looks to all of these crazy things to make their life better that clearly do nothing but make their life worse? Yes, I know some people are plagued by addiction, others by untreated or undiagnosed mental illness, but degradation's a complex issue, and none of us are above it. The significant factor here is this whole knowledge thing, knowing thing. Well, more accurately, it's understanding. But as Lieutenant Kenda observed, that's impossible when you don't suffer the same crazy, the same delusion, the same foolishness. And honestly, who would want to? Who would want to be able to clearly understand or relate to a person that, I mean, there was a show on just last night, and some guy goes in, he absolutely, I mean, he kills in the most vicious way. His 12-year-old son walks downstairs, baseball bat in hand, and proceeds to kill his wife and daughter. Didn't succeed at killing the wife and daughter. Gets on his motorcycle, rides off. I guess realizes, well, there's no going back now. At highway speed, drives head on into a semi on his motorcycle. Yeah, I mean, how are you going to understand what this guy was thinking? I mean, how in what world is this a good idea? Any of this? But as Kenda would say, I don't know because I'm not crazy. And it makes solving these kinds of problems really challenging. And frankly, it can make helping people, it can make serving people, well, some people, it can make it almost impossible. Because it's absolutely true. You can't reason with an unreasonable person. And it's equally true that you can't want it for somebody if they don't want it for themselves. You know, there's just so many of these truisms Okay, so what are we going to do? I wish I knew. I wish I knew, but I don't, because I'm not crazy. And I'm certainly not disposed to chasing foolishness. And I'm not bent toward committing crimes or pursuing doing the wrong thing so I could possibly relate firsthand. Now, it doesn't mean I'm immune from any of these things, but neither are you. Lieutenant Kenda has learned that otherwise sane people can, in some particular circumstance or situation, completely lose their mind and do things that, yeah, they might not would do otherwise. Doesn't make it right. Doesn't justify it, mind you. But it does prove that as humans, we've got this capacity. I suppose we can all fall into the wrong things, the degrading things. And truthfully, I think most of us don't. And I'm thankful for that, because most of us can and most of us do. We keep our wits about us. We have enough self-control that we don't go sliding off the edges. Speaking of sliding off the edges, Charlie Sheen, he made the news again. I mean, just the other day I saw an article. I'll put a link to this over the website, leaningtowardwisdom.com, episode 6, season 2021. Here was the title of the article: Charlie Sheen took over the internet 10 years ago. He has serious regrets. 10 years. It's been 10 years. It was a horrible scene, and it became this cultural phenomenon with a hashtag winning. In fact, you know, Sheen said, yeah, he was so guilty of winning that he sacrificed his whole career for a hashtag. In 2010, 2011, highest paid actor on TV, $2 million an episode for that CBS hit show, Two and a Half Men, $2 million an episode. I mean, what was the cast of Big Bang? And they were, you know, they were number one. Were they CBS? They were number one forever. And they were all making what, $1 million a piece. I mean, it's a lot of money, but a decade ago, Sheen was making $2 million per episode. But clearly the man had troubles. He had some serious personal issues. They did include drug and alcohol abuse. And then he had this meltdown, real public meltdown, took the internet by storm. I remember thinking, as I watched all of this unfold, and he did some streaming thing, and I tuned into a little bit of that, and I'm thinking, nobody can help this guy. There is nobody who can help this guy, because it seemed pretty apparent he's not in any frame of mind to listen to anybody. He is not going to accept any help. Now, I didn't know any of the details, but this article reveals a few details. In fact, Sheen admits that Les Moonves, who was the CEO of CBS and the top attorney, that they come to his house and they tell him, okay, the company jet fueled up on the runway. We can have the wheels up in an hour and you're going to go to rehab, right? And Sheen says in that moment, really all he could think was, hey, you know, I finally got the corporate jet. He says that's all he heard. All he heard was that they had the corporate jet ready for him. But today, his regret, he wishes he would have gotten on that jet. He wishes he would have gotten on that jet and gone to rehab and gotten himself straightened out. But he didn't. He didn't. Instead, as he puts it, he took this giant left turn, and everything else was very public and very insane. And yes, he absolutely says he has many, many regrets. He especially regrets that he was demanding a higher salary. Says, you know, I wasn't being a team player. And it was kind of comical the way that he put it. In one part of this article, he says there were 55 different ways for him to handle the situation, but he chose number 56. And hey, good for him. Because today he says he owns it. It absolutely was his fault. And as he put it, and it was desperately juvenile. Desperately juvenile. Drugs, the residual effects of drugs. And as he puts it, it was all self-generated. All self-generated. In fact, he summed it up this way. I was getting loaded and my brain wasn't working right. Yeah. Funny how that works. He did make an observation, and this was why he was in the news, because, well, Britney Spears, I mean, there's just so many people that are celebrities that the media is out there. And 10 years ago, he does make a good point. The view of media's view of mental health 10 years ago and media's view of mental health today, different. Because nobody was, according to him, nobody was reaching out to help. Now, it's pretty clear that he was not predisposed to go accepting any kind of help, but he really he talked about the media just showing up in droves, just banners and songs and all kinds of celebration, you know, because he was such a public spectacle. And as he puts it, it was a public display of a mental health moment. Sheen's like a lot. Well, I won't say he's like a lot of others, but thankfully he's like some others who survived the mayhem of their poor choices and their poor behavior. Quite unlike the fella who murdered his son and tried to kill his whole family and rode headlong into a semi. I mean, Sheen at least has lived to have some regrets and see how poorly he behaved. He can't believe he behaved so poorly. But what's done's done. He's now hoping that he gets this, what he calls a third act, one that can allow him to be remembered for his acting prowess and not for winning. Hashtag winning. Time will tell. I wish him the best. I hope he's doing much better. Hulu's got a new movie out. You may have seen this. It's kind of an oddball affair, but it's one that I found rather captivating. It's called Nomadland. Nomadland. The Atlantic magazine, they describes it as a gorgeous journey through America's promise. And in fact, they have a, you know, just a real short paragraph that probably sums the thing up better than I could. Though Fern is the fictional center of the movie, Fern is the main character. Her backstory is rooted in reality. She is from Empire, Nevada, which once served as a company town for the United States Gypsum Corporation. That's the stuff they make drywall out of. Before it closed its local mine, an opening title card reveals the toll this shutdown took on the actual community's livelihoods. The town emptied out so quickly that its zip code was discontinued. Now, I watched this movie and I already had some awareness that there is a segment of our population who are nomadic. And there's plenty of people who are full-time RVers. But Fern was part of this segment of the population that are, they're just way more nomadic than full-time RVers. These people, they venture from place to place, and they may have trailers, and they may have just a van. They venture from place to place. They take seasonal work, like Fern, this main character in the movie, does. She works for a restaurant. She works at Amazon fulfillment centers during peak seasons, state, national parks, RV parks, you know, whatever she could take to just keep on going on down the road. And knowing when Amazon was hiring and when they needed seasonal help, and you show up and you work and you make good money as long as you can, and then it peters out and you go do something different. Now, I'm already pondering this whole Lieutenant Kenda statement when I'm sitting down to watch Nomadland. And I couldn't help but think, you know, I don't know what that's like. I don't understand what that life is like because I haven't lived that life. And some of those people, they live that life by choice, but others by circumstance. And still others, maybe like Fern, the main character in this movie, both circumstance and choice. But, you know, this is far, far different than knowing because I'm not crazy. It's really not knowing because I haven't experienced it. I have not lived a nomadic life. And as we watch her story unfold, Fern and this whole cast of characters who live like she does on the roads, roaming from place to place, I felt as though I could understand it a little bit, you know? I mean, she's not crazy in the sense that Lieutenant Kenda meant it. She's not crazy in that, well, she's not roaming up and down the highway looking for people to kill. She is making a choice, and it's not a choice that I would make, but that doesn't mean anything other than, okay, she's living her life, I'm living my life. I've got this question. I mostly say this to myself, but on rare occasions I have uttered it out loud. And my doing this affects you how? My son was a school administrator, had his master's degree and all that, and enjoyed the work enough, but had a growing family, some summers off, supplementing the income, and started doing home inspections on the side. Now, here in the state of Texas, if you're going to be a home inspector, you have to be licensed and you have to go through proper education and training and all of that. And he was really wrestling with doing that full time. And, you know, here I am, I'm dad, and I'm not necessarily telling him what to do, but it was apparent to me that he was just suffering a little bit of trepidation. Completely understandable. Got a wife, got kids. And I'm like, oh, this dog will hunt. As we say here in Texas, this dog will absolutely hunt, meaning this will work. He's got mad dog skills. He's extroverted. And I'm quite envious, to tell you the truth. I'm glad he is and I'm not, but he's got all the people skills in the world, and he had the technical prowess. But there's an older gentleman who's closer to my age than my son's, and he finds out that my son is leaving education, and he's going to go do this full time. This was a couple of years ago. He's got a very successful business here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. In fact, you can find him at Ryan, R-Y-A-N, ryaninspects.com. And he's turning himself into quite a TikTok star, by the way. He does these videos, and yeah, he's good. He's good at it. So this older fellow says, well, man, what do you think about him leaving education and, man, starting his own business? And, you know, I'm not sure about that. And, of course, you know, I couldn't help but just get like a big cartoon needle out and pop this fellow's balloon. I said, and I've been encouraging him to. I think it's great. But deep down, I'm thinking, and my son starting his own business and leaving some job that you wouldn't, how did that affect you how? But come on, isn't that how it goes? Yes, you know that's how it goes. Fern's decision to live this nomadic life does not affect my life. Now, I could feel sadness for her while I'm watching the show, and I could project and I could feel the loneliness that is evident in that kind of life. I mean, she lived in her van by herself, and she had a van that she had kind of configured around, but, you know, I mean, this is not some fancy RV. It's a van. She visits her sister and her brother-in-law. They don't understand her choice. They do not understand her circumstances. And it's not like she sold her possessions, went and got a van, and hit the road. She got caught in the economic crush of the 2008 recession. And it seems, based on my view of watching this thing, that in time, necessity became her choice. Well, her family, they didn't experience what she did. They didn't live in Empire, Nevada. They didn't work at this plant that shut down after 88 years. They didn't face her circumstances. Maybe they would have handled it differently. Maybe not. We'll never know. What we do know is what she did, and we know what she's doing. And like I said, she's not roaming up and down the highway looking for people to steal from or people to murder. The woman's just doing what she can to keep on moving down the road. Judgment is easy. Compassion is hard, and all of us are prone to assumptions, judgments, and usually harsh critical judgments. Few of us are bent toward deeper understanding, though, because, that's harder. It takes more effort. It means conversation. It might even mean uncomfortable conversation. Because you got to go find out. If you're able, you got to ask questions. Well, why bother with all that when I can just sit here behind my keyboard in solitude and I can just draw my own conclusions? I can fill in the gaps with what I think happened or what I think is going on here. If you pay attention to the media, you very quickly realize that we are bombarded with this kind of thinking. So it's no big shock as to why we all kind of gravitate to this kind of behavior. For me, I listen to weekday radio, and it's dubbed sports talk, but really it's more guy talk. And I love these people. I mean, these are my daily friends on the air. But this week, Tiger Woods, he has this bad car wreck in L.A. Now, at the time that it happened, that morning here on Dallas Radio, there was so much that was not known. We just knew that there was this horrific crash. There was extensive injury to him, and he was in major surgery. And, I mean, come on. You got to assume, it's safe to assume, that there's going to be a long rehab. But I'm listening to this station. Again, it's my very favorite. And I begin to notice just how assumptions were ruling the day. And for 2 or 3 days straight, every show went into very lengthy what-if conversations with the radio host wondering, I mean, do you think he could have been abusing? I mean, do you think pain pills were involved in this? I mean, do you think he was up all night? Do you think he got any sleep? Man alive, you know, I wonder, will he ever walk again? I mean, much less play golf. And then word came out that he had been in the car for like 35 minutes. They had a press conference, the sheriff's department out there. You know, it's Hollywood. Come on, it's L.A., so everybody's got to get in front of a camera or a microphone. And they start divulging all these facts that just, I don't know, just seemed odd. But that it was 35 minutes. Police got out there, and they weren't able to extract him safely, so they wait for EMTs or whatever, 35 minutes. And so, naturally, Dallas Radio is wondering, why so long? Why did it take him so long? Wonder why it took him 35 minutes. Can you imagine being in that car for 35 minutes in the condition he was in? And they wonder, why did he leave his hotel around 7 a.m.? He had to make an hour-long drive to a 7:30, you heard it right, a 7:30 photo shoot appointment. So he leaves at 7 to make it to a 7:30 appointment, but it's going to take him an hour to get there. And he's Tiger Woods. Why wouldn't he be late? You're Tiger Woods. You can be late. Drew Brees and some other high-end people were going to be at this photo, but okay, again, you know, they're wondering all of this. He's Tiger Woods. And why is he driving? Why doesn't he just have a limo? Why doesn't he have a driver? All of this wondering, all of these conjectures. A conjecture is an opinion or a conclusion formed on the basis of incomplete information. And that largely is what we do. Conjecture. Lieutenant Kenda was not so much making a conjecture as he was drawing a conclusion when he observed that this criminal behavior of murder, he didn't really, yes, he knew people, they did it out of love and greed and all, but fundamentally, you know, I mean, what are they thinking and why do they think that's the solution? He freely admitted he didn't know because he's not crazy. Well, that's a conclusion. That's a judgment or decision reached by reasoning. That's a conclusion. Now, you can take issue with Kenda's reasoning on why he can't understand, meaning, because I'm not crazy, but it's a logical conclusion. And as for Tiger's car wreck, listen, I am not qualified to draw a conclusion beyond the fact he was driving too fast. He's clearly running late. He's trying to make up time. And who among us has not done that? And thankfully, most of us have not ended up going off the road, tumbling end over end or side over side or whatever it was. You know, conjecture's pointless for me. Now, I get it. I get it. Come on, Dallas Talk Radio, it burns segments, right? It'll burn an 8-minute segment of airtime, and it gets people listening, and it's what people want to talk about, and it's what they want to hear. Okay, I get it. Sadly, it fuels our collective urge to just keep on forming these opinions with woefully incomplete and sometimes very inaccurate information. Mostly, it seems that conjecture is steeped in assuming the worst. Well, I learned that as a teenager. So I'm working in a hi-fi shop, and the boss, you know, none of us had a story in our head that frankly made a lot of sense. And so we just kind of had to write our own story. I mean, if the boss called you to the office, your mind didn't think, oh boy, I'm going to get a raise. none of us thought that. Anytime if we got summons to the office, it was, this is not good. This is not good. I mean, this is going to be really, really bad. Or at the best, the boss is calling us in to say, we're going to have to work late or we're going to have to come in early tomorrow. I mean, the boss is going to impose on us. We know that. I mean, we're dead solid sure about that. And you know what? Mostly we were right. So by the time I'm in my 20s and I'm in a leadership role and I'm running an organization, I already had my mind made up. I think it's really important that people have a better story, a true story, a story where they can clearly see how they can make a positive difference, a story where they can better understand, how do I fit in the big picture? Because if we don't give it to them, they will do what we all do, conjecture. They'll fill in the gaps. These things that they don't know, they'll make it up. And it won't be good. It never is. Lieutenant Kenda doesn't know. He doesn't know. What in the world are you thinking to get a baseball bat and go beat your 12-year-old son to death? And then, bat in hand, walk downstairs, walk into the kitchen, preparing to do that to your wife and daughter. I don't know. And Kenda doesn't know either, because neither of us is crazy. Well, not yet. So does this mean that in order to understand, you would have to be crazy? I mean, to properly understand why a drug addict, for instance, would kill somebody, in order to just get more drugs, do we have to be like him in order to understand him? I mean, I'm thinking about these things because it's this quest, this big overarching quest to understand. Now, let me encourage you, don't focus on Kenda's reasoning for not knowing. That is that because I'm not crazy. Instead, focus on the first part of what he said. I don't know. I don't know. Well, neither do I. But I'm sitting here, it's 3:30 in the morning, I'm watching this, and I'm thinking, is it possible? I mean, is it even possible to understand? And I've got some people on my mind. Yeah, I've absolutely got some people on my mind. I've got one particular person on my mind. And you may too. I know I'm not alone. I mean, there are all kinds of people around us that are making some really bad choices. And it's not because we're controlling. It's not because we want to live their life. It's because we don't want them to make their lives worse. So let's see if we can help each other, because I know I'm not alone in this. Anytime I see somebody in a bad way, I just tend to think about the people in their inner circle. I think about their family. I think about their close friends. I think about the people that love them. And we've got these TV shows about hoarders and the homeless and murderers and drug addicts and just all sorts of people in all sorts of distressing circumstances. And quite often these shows will show the family and the friends. And sometimes the stories are even told through the eyes of the family and friends. You know, but these are 30-minute long or an hour long TV programs, and I wonder what does life look like for these people once the cameras, the lights, the microphones are all packed up and hauled off, and now life goes back to whatever normal is for these people. I remember watching an interview with Jeffrey Dahmer's dad, Lionel. Lionel admitted that, you know, other than Jeffrey's extreme shyness as a kid, which he by the way, admonishes parents today, if you have a child who's extremely shy, handle up on that. Do something. He didn't. And other than that, he and his wife didn't see. He seemed like any other kid. Now, later, he's arrested, he's convicted, he's in prison, and he's interviewed, and, of course, he's this case study, right? And a lot of things came to light. Then, like when he was 12, 13, and 14, he's riding his bike up and down these country roads, and he's searching for roadkill, and he's got plastic bags. He's saving the roadkill. And Lionel admits, we knew nothing about that. And if we had, we would have intervened immediately. His childhood friends didn't know anything about it. He hid it. As an adult, Jeffrey Dahmer made the admission that he knew early on, he knew that he was, well, as he puts it, he knew he was either sick or evil or both. Turns out both. In 1994, Lionel wrote a book entitled A Father's Story. It's extremely expensive. I guess it's collectible now. And in that book, I've read interviews with him talking about that book through the years, and I've watched him. Yeah, he was on Larry King, and he observed in the book, evidently, that Jeffrey is just a much, much darker version of himself. That's quite an admission. Both of them are horribly shy, very insecure, and very controlling. Now, Lionel, he went on to become this analytical chemist. Jeffrey, it's just a steady string of failures. People are quite interested, though. How does Jeffrey Dahmer happen? How do we get a Jeffrey Dahmer? Lionel, he seems to have tried to help other parents by facing these realities of what his son had done. And like I said, he appeared in, I don't know how many interviews, and there have been documentaries that included him, and he wrote this book. And I get skeptics can claim, oh, well, he's just trying to profit from his son's sins. I don't think so. I really don't. I think that's a horribly cynical view, and I disagree with it. But that's just me. What do I know? I told you I said that a lot. Lack of understanding. I mean, there it is again. You know, we're still just working to figure things out. Still trying to understand. Not with a voyeuristic curiosity, but just to really better understand. Now, me, I'm got my hand in the air. My number one reason for all this is so I can improve, so I can understand, because I want to help myself. I want to better understand from the past, mine and yours and anybody else's. I certainly want to better understand how to cope with the present, because, well, that's what wisdom is. Right? It's getting it right in real time. That means present. And I'm optimistic about the future. We want to improve moving forward. And like Lionel Dahmer, I figure, you know, if more of us are willing to share our struggles, we just might learn a thing or two. And we might find our own path toward understanding. And I'm a Christian. I don't make any apologies about it. Well, nothing to apologize for. Rather proud of it, to tell you the truth. Most of my understanding stems from my belief, my conviction, and my understanding about God as revealed in the Bible. And in the past decade, I've often found myself going back to take a look at the life of King David. Now, here recently, I've got this book, and I've had this book since the 90s about King David, and I've read it a time or two, maybe more, but I began to read this book out loud to my wife every evening as we just studied. And just here's the fascinating thing. This is a man who was acknowledged as being a man after God's own heart. And yet everybody, even people that are atheist and agnostic, know about David's sin with Bathsheba. Have you ever thought, what if you were a character in the Bible? And aren't you glad you aren't? Because we would know. We would all know. It would be there recorded for all time. I mean, even people that don't think about God at all know about David's sin with Bathsheba. And it's puzzling, isn't it? How can a man described as a man after God's own heart betray God so severely he ends up murdering Bathsheba's innocent husband so he can have her for himself? Here's what I understand. I understand selfishness. I understand sin. I understand lust. Do I understand it to those degrees? Well, thankfully I don't. But I know this, we're all capable of being blinded by our own desires. From kings to, well, those of us that aren't kings, we're all capable of suffering from delusions of our own making. King David proves it. Jeffrey Dahmer's depravity proves it. The man that killed his 12-year-old son proves it. The Bible also teaches me that God created us with this capacity to make up our minds. God not only gave us the ability, he gave us the right to make up our own mind. That is, we can do what we choose. God made it so. Now, what he wants us to be redeemed from our sins. And he's the only one capable of helping us do that. And here's the irony of ironies, that's what God wants. And you know who the only people who have the capacity to resist God? Yeah, you and me. You and me. The Creator made it possible for us to say, nope, not going to have any of that. We can rebel and we can serve ourselves just like King David did. Now, fortunately, God dispatched Nathan the prophet, who was also a good friend of David, to confront David with his sin. It seems to me that God waited a while and just kind of let things unfold, and David didn't make the first move, so God did. And immediately David confessed his sin and begged God to forgive him. It's kind of like that famous parable of the prodigal son who goes off, squanders everything that he had inherited, but he comes crawling back home, begging for the father's forgiveness. And he only did that after he came to himself in the pig pen. He got so down and out, he was so hungry, he just wanted to eat what these swine were eating. And the Bible says he came to himself, which basically means he had this, what have I done moment. There are many, many people who don't come to themselves. I think about Lionel Dahmer. I think about the parents of murdered children. I think about the parents of the murderers like Lionel. I think about all the people that I know firsthand who are enduring grief and sorrow and sadness. And I don't mean because some unforeseen circumstances come their way that they had no part in. I'm not talking about somebody who gets some horrific diagnosis. I'm talking about people who are enduring grief, sorrow, and sadness because it's by their own hand. They've made foolish, idiotic choices. And I look at some because they have regrets, but there are so, so many others who aren't to that point yet and may never get to that point of having regret. I think about my own regrets. I think about Charlie Sheen's regrets. I think about what Lieutenant Kenda said, and I realize that there's just a lot of things I'm never going to understand. I know that, but I'm not willing to throw up my hands and say, well, because I can't understand everything, then I can't understand anymore. I don't understand how a person can go from one thing, being one thing, to being something completely different. I mean, do you understand this? I don't understand how a person can go from having so many advantages to having none because they lost it. I don't understand how a person can go from having a good reputation, a great reputation, to being despicable. From behaving with integrity and honor and respect to behaving with blatant immorality and foolishness. I don't understand it. I don't understand it. I don't understand how a person can go from being reasonable and not cognitively impaired to being completely unreasonable and clearly cognitively impaired. From being a good person, maybe a great person, to being a terrible, terrible person. Sometimes I get tickled occasionally at the social media memes. And here's one that always gets me. I don't get tickled at this one anymore. This one, frankly, irks me. You're not what you do. You're not what you do. Yes, you are. Yes, you. In fact, that's exactly who you are. There's an old, it's a 1980s movie. In fact, 1980 is when it came out. And the only reason I know this is because it was the year my son was born. And the name of the movie was Carney. And the only reason I watched it is because Robbie Robertson of the band was in it. Well, he and Gary Busey. I mean, come on, Gary Busey. You got to watch Gary Busey, don't you? Well, in this movie, there's this crazy old Carney. Carney are carnival workers. Talking about nomads. It's a nomad with a twist. Well, there's this crazy old Carney, and just out of nowhere, he utters this great, great line, which still makes no sense, but I've always loved the line anyway. And here it is. If I had all day, I'd be an astronaut. If I had all day, I'd be an astronaut. And Gary Busey, he responds to the old man's declaration and says, well, we don't have all day, and you're not an astronaut. And indeed, we don't have all day. Because if we had all day, I'd be an astronaut, and I'm not an astronaut, so we clearly don't have all day. That's how I feel about these people that utter this kind of nonsense. You're not what you do. Okay, well then, am I what I think about doing? If I think about being an astronaut, does that make me an astronaut? How about if I say I'm an astronaut? Will that make me an astronaut? No, dummy. What makes me an astronaut is being an astronaut, doing the work of an astronaut, putting in the work that qualifies me to be an astronaut. So no, I'm not an astronaut. Here's the problem with that. It doesn't answer what I am, though. It just answers what I'm not. There are many things that I am not. Hopefully I'm not crazy. And hopefully I'm not crazy enough, because I'm like Lieutenant Kenda. I don't know sometimes. I don't understand, because I'm not crazy. Let me tell you what I do know. How about we approach it from that vantage point? Maybe something positive can come from this monologue. Here's what I do know. People, including me and including you, we can do whatever we want to do. We can do whatever we please. And you know what? Mostly we do. Yes, I know. Other people can impose on us, and we got jobs, and we got bosses, and we got mortgages, and we got situations, and we got circumstances, we got obligations. I get all that. But fundamentally, we choose any and all of these things, and we all behave like water. Mostly, we just find the path of least resistance where we can be most comfortable, and that's where we go. And who cares? Never mind if it's profitable. That's not under consideration. Never mind if we're growing. Never mind if we're improving. Never mind if we're transforming. Never mind if we're being challenged. We don't want to be challenged. That is not the purpose of the day. The purpose of the day is just to get through it. And in getting through it, we don't always do. And it might be arguable that, I mean, do we very often do the things that ideally serve us? I also know this to be true. It mostly is about us. It is. You know that's true. Stephen Pressfield, he wrote a book some years ago. I would recommend it. I'll put a link to this in the show notes as well. The War of Art. The War of Art. It's subtitled Break Through the Blocks and Win Your Inner Creative Battles. Hence the name, The War of Art. It's kind of a take on that classic, The Art of War. This is the war of art. Pressfield says in this book, quote, don't prepare, begin. Our enemy is not lack of preparation. The enemy is resistance. Our chattering brain produces excuses. Start before you are ready. He talks a lot in this book about the resistance. It's that thing that gets in the way of you doing something difficult, something challenging, something daring, something better, something creative. Pressfield writes, fear is good. Like self-doubt, fear is an indicator. Fear tells us what we have to do. Remember our rule of thumb. The more scared we are of a work or calling, the more sure we can be that we have to do it. Resistance is experienced as fear. The degree of fear equates to the strength of resistance. Therefore, the more fear we feel about a specific enterprise, the more certain we can be that that enterprise is important to us and the growth of our soul. That's why we feel so much resistance. If it meant nothing to us, there'd be no resistance. Now, I've learned that some people, they avoid resistance. And not like he's talking about. That is, they don't resist themselves. There's no friction at all between what they want to do and what they actually do. In fact, the criminals that Lieutenant Kenda encounters, they're people like this. Grab a gun, grab a baseball bat, gonna kill this person, done. If they think they're gonna go rob somebody or commit violence, done. Where thankfully, most of us, we resist thinking, well, we don't even think that those actions are even a possibility. While these people, they not only think that these are possible things, they're doable. I mean, come on, I got the gun in my hand. Well, what do you mean I can't do this? Of course I can do it. It's called self-control. It's called discipline. It's called temperance. And not everybody is willing to, not everybody's willing to let that kind of resistance have a positive work in their best interest. Pressfield, he's using resistance because he's writing about the fears in creative pursuits. Now, admittedly, he uses the war of art in a really broad, loosely defined terms. It could be a book, an article, a poem, a blog post, a podcast, a video, a drawing, a song, a movie, a script, a job, a task, anything productive. I don't know Stephen, but I know this. He is not urging people to ignore their fears of murdering people. He is not wanting people to avoid the resistance, ignore the resistance to commit crimes or do harm to yourself or to others. He ain't got that in mind. That is not the context. I've also learned this to be true, and that is you can't want it enough for somebody else. Because each of us basically has to make our own mind up. We have to make our own choices, and we have the capacity to resist influences, especially the ones that we don't agree with. All you got to do is watch any episode of Hoarders or Intervention. You seen this show? I mean, man, these are just horribly depressing shows. I wouldn't recommend them. But if you watch one of them, you'll see what I mean. The hoarder, the drug addict, they don't care what their family thinks. They don't care what their friends think. They don't care what negative impact their lives are having on these people. You know what they care about? Yeah, they care about themselves. Let's go back to that second point that I mentioned. Mostly it's about us. They're not listening to any of these people in their life. And it bears repeating, not all influences come from a place of people wanting to control us. I get really sick and tired of hearing all the hubbub, you know, Your best gift is to not care what other people think. Yeah, if you want to live a horrible life, that'd be a gift, all right, I guess, because it would just keep on giving. Don't listen to people. Just go your own way and be the biggest fool that you can possibly be. Yeah, that'll work out well for you. I mean, the internet is just so full of idiocy. It's Yeah, you just have to smirk sometimes, and other times I laugh, and still other times I just want to cry. There are people in your life who care deeply about you. They want you to live your best life. They don't want to live it for you. Your life impacts them, though, because they care. And I don't know when we lost our way thinking that that was a bad thing. And thinking that that was people trying to exercise control over us. And the admonition for us to stop thinking and stop caring what other people think. Because it comes from this place of care and concern and wanting what's best for us. But you know what? It doesn't matter how much loved ones want it for us. And it doesn't matter how much we want it for somebody else. Nobody can want it enough to bring about positive change if the person doesn't want to change. I mean, look at your life. Okay, I'd like to be 20 pounds, okay, 30 pounds lighter. Can you want that enough for me to make that happen? Email me. I'd like to hear from you. No, you can't. I'm not talking about a gift. I'm not talking about a prize. I'm talking about a choice, a behavior, some action that only I can make, that only you can make. There is no human being who can want it for you enough. Well, I'll go you one better. God the Creator cannot want it for you enough because He does. The Bible says He wants everybody to come to Him and obey and be saved. He wants everybody to end up in heaven. You know why it's not going to happen? Not because God doesn't want it enough, because God wants it. It's because you have the power and the ability to do whatever you want to do, no matter what God wants, no matter what anybody else wants, including your family. I know this to be true as well. Everything is hard until it's easy. And I know that mostly we want easy. But sometimes, here's the paradox of it all, easy grows increasingly harder. A person's well-educated, got a terrific career, got a family, got kids, and over time, they just begin to think of themselves more and more as a victim. And they keep saying to themselves and maybe to friends, you know, they deserve to be happy. I'm just not happy, and I deserve to be happy. And next thing you know, they've been unfaithful to their spouse, and they've been more unfaithful to their spouse, and now there's drugs and alcohol involved. I don't know which one came first. Who knows, and does it matter? It's a choice. It's a choice. But they're singing this ever-popular refrain that we hear all over the internet, I deserve to be happy. I deserve to be happy. And we watch this train wreck that they seem to be unable to see. Oh, the train wreck? It's your life. Your life's a train wreck. And we think, this is happiness? No, I mean, it looks like colossal selfishness and destructive behavior, and it's all posing as the pursuit of self and happiness. And in time, the marriage is broken, the career off the tracks, next stop, homelessness, unbounded immorality, unbridled drug use and alcohol, a daily devotion to avoid resistance of all kinds. I mean, no self-control, no restraint. I'm going to do whatever I want to do whenever I want to do it, and ain't nobody going to tell me different. Defiant. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. That sure looks hard from where I'm sitting. I mean, there's nothing about that nosedive that looks easy to me. To me, it looks like self-centeredness, undisciplined, irresponsible, immoral, unbridled, unrestrained behavior. And a scripture leaps to my mind. Proverbs chapter 13, verse 15. Good understanding giveth favor. Good understanding giveth favor, but the way of transgressors is hard. Now, this is why I'm rather obsessed with improving understanding, and it's why I say it over and over and over here at leaningtowardwisdom.com. The pursuit of wisdom, as I see it, is getting it right in real time. Any idiot can get it right looking in the rearview mirror. Doesn't take a brainiac to do that, but it takes some discipline and hard work and dedication to get it right in real time. Here I am in this moment. I've got this choice to make. What choice am I going to make? Am I going to make the right choice? Am I going to make the unwise choice? Am I going to be wise? Am I going to be foolish? I know after 43 years of marriage, I know that it is hard to have a great marriage. But it is much, much harder, I suspect, to have a bad one. I know that it's hard to have a productive career, but it's much, much harder to have an unproductive career. You know what else I know to be true? Sometimes the path forward requires us to let go. Now, maybe what we have to let go of is the past. Maybe we have to let go of a thought. Maybe we have to let go of a philosophy. Maybe we have to let go of a viewpoint. Maybe we have to let go of a person. Maybe even somebody that we still love very much. And there is an auxiliary point. There's kind of a B to this A of sometimes the path forward requires us to let go. And that is that every single one of us need to embrace enough wisdom to know and exercise our limitations. You've likely heard this, you know, this to a person that's a hammer, everything looks like a nail. Right. We hear that. I don't use that. I rather use a flathead screwdriver for my illustration, because when it comes to us thinking that we can be that somebody who can help somebody else, I know people who are flathead screwdrivers, and to them, every problem, every situation, every circumstance, every person looks like a flathead screw. And the reason I use a screwdriver is because they happily insert themselves. Hammers don't insert themselves. They happily insert themselves in every situation, with everybody, in every circumstance, in every situation, because they arrogantly, pompously think that they have some obligation to be the fixer. More appropriately, they think they can fix it. Bully for them. And quite often, as you can imagine, because you know this, because you know people like this as well, they make matters worse. In some cases, they make matters much, much worse. No, they don't see it. Well, I can tell you why they don't see it, because they are the hero in their story, and the story is about them. Go back to that second point I mentioned, that second truth. It mostly is about us. And for these people, it's all about them. They are inserting themselves so they can feel better about themselves. It doesn't have anything to do with this person they're trying to help. We've got to let go of that by understanding we've got limitations, all of us. Lionel Dahmer had to let go of Jeffrey. Yeah, I know, Jeffrey was a son. But Lionel's crimes, whatever they may have been, weren't Jeffrey's. And Jeffrey's weren't Lionel's. Yes, I know people can judge him. In fact, people did judge him. I'm sure people are still judging Lionel. He's like 84 now. I hope Lionel has figured out how to let go, at least to a large degree. Of course, Jeffrey's, you know, he got murdered in prison. I hope that Lionel has been able to let go to a large enough degree that he's been able to move forward. I mean, I wish him all the best. Millions of parents have to learn to let go of grown-up kids. I know some are controlling and some they need to learn. Let your kids, I mean, they're adults. You got to let them grow up. But I also know some parents of wayward adult kids who have to let go knowing that holding on, it ain't helping. I mean, the son who's a criminal and behaving poorly isn't served by parents who hold on, because the parents can just get dragged down with that misbehaving son. Every summer around here in North Central Texas, we got a lot of lakes around here, and there's always drownings. And very, very often, it seems like, I don't have the stats to prove it, but it seems like more often than not, a story involving a drowning will involve multiple victims. And you know why? Yeah, somebody got in trouble. They're out in the water and they're in trouble, and somebody bails off a dock or they bail off of a boat more often than not around here, and they both end up drowning. Now, I'm not saying that efforts shouldn't be put forth to save somebody who's drowning, but I am saying that whatever the situation, we got to be careful. We got to be very, very careful, because two deaths aren't better than one. Yes, of course, no deaths are ideal, but sometimes no death, that's just not possible. Sometimes people are too far gone. I mean, sometimes people have been traveling down the wrong road for years. What are you going to do? You going to chase them? I mean, you know what you're going to have to do, because these aren't people who are moving toward you. They aren't people who are moving toward wisdom. They're not leaning toward wisdom. They lean increasingly more and more to foolishness. And if you're going to follow them, you know what that means. Yeah, it means you're going to have to go where they're going. They're moving away from you. They're moving away from what's right. They're moving away from what is wise. Yeah. Sometimes we got to reach a point and got to say, I'm not going any further. I'm stopping. and I'm going to let go. And we also have to let go of thinking that we're the solution for every problem. You know, very recently, there was a person who, they had behaved in a foolish way, and frankly, they were better than this, but a third person who knows us both was remarking about their behavior, and I made the observation to this third person, this concerned person, and I said, you know, I'm not the right person for that job, meaning the job of trying to help this person not behave foolishly. I once was, but I'm not anymore. I had, in that moment, I had enough wits about me regarding this situation, this particular person, to know that I am no longer the right person for the job. Now, it could just have easily been somebody that I was never the right person. In this particular case, it was somebody that, yeah, some time ago, I could have been the right person, but I'm not. And that's not an easy thing necessarily to let go of, because I would rather like to think, maybe like you, that, okay, I've got some capacity to help here. But age and experience and wisdom have taught me better. It's delusional. It's completely delusional to think that we are the right person for every job and everybody, because we aren't. None of us. Do you have any unsafe people in your life? Yeah, it's a rhetorical question. Of course you do. I don't know about you, but I intentionally keep those relationships just as shallow and as distant as I possibly can. If I can ditch the relationship, I do that. That's a conscious decision on my part. But in some cases, you can't. And in those cases, I'm kind of like the Heisman pose. You know, it's just a big stiff arm. And I do that, yes, for myself, but I also do it for the other person. I mean, there's no point in enraging people, I don't think, by intentionally going up to this person that I'm not safe with, and they probably aren't safe with me either, and demonstrate to them, hey, look at me, I'm breathing the same air as you. You know, I mean, I don't see what positive thing comes from that. But I have other people in my life, and you do too, who are very safe. I mean, these are people that I trust completely. These are people who have, over time, proven that they have my best interest in heart, and I have their best interest at heart. I would not injure them. I would not harm them for anything. Which ones do you think are best able to serve me? Which ones do you think I would be best able to serve? Yeah, exactly. The safe ones. So brace yourself. Brace yourself for the real truth. You are unsafe for some people, and yet you're safe for others. It's kind of like that old adage, which I'm rather fond of. In order to be loved by some, you must be willing to be hated by a few. And it's true. It is absolutely true. I'll tell you the bigger fact, and that is most people don't think about you. I keep referring back to that second point. It's mostly about us. Most people, they're not thinking about you. You're a non-factor. I'm sorry. I thought you knew. It's like that joke I read the other day. It's, you know, I'm sorry I hurt your feelings when I called you stupid. I thought you already knew. Oh, you're a non-factor. I mean, we've all got to learn to let go of thinking that we can serve everybody at the individual confidential level. We can't, unless we're safe for them. And we really have to let go of thinking that everybody's thinking about us. Trust me, they're not. And all this letting go, it can be hard. It can be hard. The thing that makes it easier, I think, is to get our minds off of ourselves. Too much focus on ourselves. That prevents us, I think, from doing better and being better. I also know this to be true. There are times when we need to turn the page. And sometimes turning the page means, well, it might mean closing the book altogether. Now, let me give you some context, because it matters. When it's somebody that I care for very deeply, this is insanely hard. I mean, right? It makes sense. If it's somebody that I really don't much care about, if it's somebody that I dislike, oh, well, it's super easy. For me, turning the page really does more look like closing the book. I don't know how much faith or stock you put in this Myers-Briggs thing, you know, these personality types. I am, according to that, I am an INFJ. Like 2% of the people are. I wish I weren't, but I am. And there's this phenomenon when you read some of this material, there's this thing called the INFJ door slam. I completely relate to this, by the way. I know it's true. I can reach a point in a relationship that the relationship just is so one-sided, and it just seems like I'm just absolutely busting my tail to push things forward. And when it stops working out for me over an extended period of time, I might add, this isn't some knee-jerk reaction. I just get to this point. I've had enough. I'm out. See ya. And I never talk to him again. Doesn't happen a lot, but it has happened. It has happened professionally and personally. It's happened. And sometimes there are times that we need to do that. There are times that we just need to turn the page. This is different than letting go, because there's some emotional and mental stuff with this. And while I might be very capable as an INFJ of perpetrating this INFJ door slam, when it comes to people that you care deeply about, it's a whole different matter. I can look at the wake of destruction, and sometimes I just conclude, you know, the damage that's done is so severe, I am just powerless to do anything about it. I'm powerless to influence any repair. The self-inflicted harm, the harm done to other people who had no part in it at all, it just seems so vast and so extensive. And yeah, I lose optimism. All the king's men were unable to put Humpty Dumpty together again. And I find myself inching toward this point where I suspect we all must get to if we are going to move forward and save ourselves from drowning in the problems of these people that we love. Now, Lieutenant Kenda is not making an observation about people he loves. He's making an observation about criminals that he's come to learn because he's been investigating them. And like every homicide detective, he's got this murder book. He's got this book of all the facts and the details of the case. And the murder book gets closed. It can get closed and get thrown into a cold case file, but it's not really closed. A murder book is only closed by a homicide detective because they've solved the case. They've got a conviction. For me, it's not because it's been solved. That's not where closing the book has to come into. I got to get to a point where I can close the book, because I just don't understand. And I've got to reach a point where I know I'm never going to understand. I don't know, because I'm not crazy. The website is leaningtowardwisdom.com. There's some links over there. I mentioned them. Episode 6, season 2021. I don't know, because I'm not crazy. I love the show. I'm a big fan. I know that show's going off, and he's now on the Discovery Plus streaming platform. It's completely off topic, but how many streaming services do you consume regularly? Man, alive. People started cutting the cord, you know, to save money. And it's like, okay, this may not end up saving anybody any money. There's so many of these things. But he's got a new show. I'm sure it's worthwhile. I love the guy. I find him highly entertaining, even though the subject matter is sometimes dreadful. Leaning Toward Wisdom is Modern Tales of an Ancient Pursuit. You've just heard your first episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Maybe you've just heard your 233rd episode or whatever it is. My name is Randy Cantrell. I appreciate you. Join the Facebook group if you dare. There's a link over at the website, leaningtowardwisdom.com. Welcome and greetings from inside the Yellow Studio.